The journey to a smoke-free future can be a long and winding road, but if you're ready for a change, consider taking Zyn for a spin. Zyn nicotine pouches offer a fresh way to discover your nicotine satisfaction. Anywhere, anytime. No smoke, no spit, and no lingering odor. Get in gear with the Zyn 10 Challenge and enjoy 10 smoke-free, spit-free days for just $5.95. Order online and start your new journey today. Warning, this product contains nicotine. Nicotine is an addictive chemical.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. That's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
There's a lot happening these days, but I have just the thing to get you up to speed on what matters without taking too much of your time. The 7 from the Washington Post is a podcast that gives you the 7 most important and interesting stories, and we always try to save room for something fun. You get it all in about 7 minutes or less. I'm Hannah Jewell. I'll get you caught up with the 7 every weekday. So follow the 7 right now.
I learned to play poker sitting at the bar at Stand Up New York Comedy Store. There was a bartender, and I hate that I can't remember his name, because he would play cards with me while he was dishing drinks or whatever. And this is a mantra that I try to live by. And he would always tell me, he was like, Kari, whatever you do, play with your balls. You win big, you lose big, just play with your balls. Hi, my name is Kari Payton, and I have known Brian Baumgartner for decades. That's my claim to fame.
There you go. Hi, everybody, and welcome back to Off the Beat on this Tuesday edition. I am your host, Brian Baumgartner. Now, I go way back with today's guest. In fact, I go all the way back to my college days at good old SMU. Are you sensing a trend? I'm going to have everybody who ever went to SMU on the podcast at some point, I guess. I was lucky enough to go to school with Kari Payton, who, let me say, he has been a talent since day one. I have always admired Kari's work, but since college, oh man, he has done a lot. Playing Cyborg for the last 20 years, roughly 20 years on Teen Titans and many other animated DC series, Kari has inspired countless fans, and he has changed the voice acting game for good. But now he is perhaps best known for his on-camera role as the charismatic King Ezekiel on The Walking Dead. That's right, the original, the iconic Walking Dead. I'm so excited to share our conversation as we get into the nitty-gritty of the business, people, including Kari's jump from voice to on-camera work and what it was like to join a show as huge as The Walking Dead. This is a good one, you guys. You have my word on that. So here he is, my good friend, Kari Payton.
Bubble and squeak. love it. Bubble and squeak, I know. Bubble and squeak, I cook it every moment left over from the night before.
What's up?
Hey, what's going on, man?
How are you, my friend?
It has been a very, very long time, dude.
It has been a...
I don't know when was the last time I actually saw you? Were you walking through the neighborhood? Because you used to live in my...
Yes.
In the same neighborhood as my brother.
That's right.
And I would see you taking walks when I was just hanging out with, I think the first time I just screamed at you. You're like, what the hell?
from the window as I walked by.
Yeah.
Yes, yeah, exactly.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, listen, I moved away and you're a very busy man. I mean, you basically have been living in our old home state for the last several years.
Yeah, 2 years. Yeah, yeah. Well, yeah, definitely. I used to fly back and forth a lot,
yes.
And then the pandemic hit, and I just got stuck. But it's been a crazy last couple of years, man. But it's good. But I literally just got back to Los Angeles and getting settled and everything. The pandemic has done so many things. But I used to do random studio, like home studio recordings, as you do, you know. But I would just do them in a walk-in closet. And then over the course of the pandemic, it was like, well, now you just slowly build an actual studio in your house.
Yes.
And so I'm doing this for, I feel like the third time in 2 years, it's been crazy, but I finally got this space put together. This used to be a bathroom.
The fact you are such a professional voiceover actor that you're willing to give up a toilet to have a studio.
It's true. Now it helps that I've got a few toilets in the house. I got a few more. That it was funny because I really had to pee one day and I ran in here and before this was finished, and I ran in here and I used the bathroom and I was like, you realize you're giving this up. You realize you're giving up the, because it's right next to the garage, it's like,
right.
And I was like, you're giving up the convenience of dancing at the door and being able to pop right in. But somehow I will make it work.
You'll make it work. All right. Let's go back. For those of you, Kari and I, we've known each other too long to mention. If I start doing the math, I'm going to start getting really uncomfortable. we'll talk about that in a minute. You grew up in Georgia, in my home state as well. Mm-hmm. There in Augusta.
No, Georgia. No, I was born in Augusta. But
you were born in Augusta,
and then we bounced around a little bit. But by the third grade, I had moved to Athens, Georgia, and that's where I stayed until I graduated from high school. So it was Athens, right. Georgia, home of the Bulldogs.
We have that in common. I didn't live there, but was there most weekends as a child as well. rooting on
it's an awesome town on the weekends, man.
The red and black, yes.
Know? Yeah, yeah. You could get fed just walking near the stadium. Everybody's tailgating and throwing you hungry, you want to eat?
Yeah. When did you realize that you had a passion, at least, for acting?
Man, it was really early.
It was
really early on. I remember going to see the first thing I remembered that honestly made me want to become an actor. I think it was the first grade. It might have been something else that I don't remember. But in the first grade, we went to see a community theater production of Cyrano de Bergerac in Anniston, Alabama. My dad was at Fort McClellan, Alabama. He was a captain in the army, and we were stationed there for a while, and we went to see Cyrano. And I just remember watching this dude and just thinking, this is the coolest guy I've ever seen in my life. he's the coolest guy I've ever seen in my life. Yeah, you know what? And he reminded me of the fox from Robin Hood. The Disney movie, which was my favorite growing up. Probably still is my favorite. And he's literally, you know, sword fighting. He's the wittiest. He's the sharpest. He's got everything. And I think it was lost on me that he was kind of so down on himself when I first watched Cyrano. You know,
right.
All I could see is that he was the most amazing thing I'd ever seen. And I was like, I want to do that. And I don't know. At some point I went home and found a bunch of rocks and washed them and started painting them. And then I started going door to door to my neighbors trying to sell rocks. And one of my neighbors called my mom and said, "Your boy's out here selling rocks, trying to sell rocks to us." And my mom said, you know, had me come home and said, "Why are you selling rocks?" And I was like, "I need capital to start my theater company." And she was like, "What?" I don't know where I came up with this, but this is what my mom told. I remember trying to sell the rocks.
Okay. I was
going to start a theater company and perform in the backyard of our house, you know, and there was just like nothing but like Georgia woods out back of the house. But that was it for me. I remember watching Cyrano de Bergerac and being like, that's what I want to do. And then there was a TV show called Emergency that was about paramedics. And it was around the same time. And I remember thinking, I want to be a paramedic. And then I saw Cyrano and I was like, no, I don't want to be a paramedic. I want to be on a TV show about paramedics.
Okay. You know,
So it was all around the first grade that it first came together that this was something that I wanted to do. I wanted to be Cyrano.
That's young. By the way, have you played Cyrano?
No, I've never played Cyrano. Okay.
Well,
yeah.
There's still time. So
exactly.
So you decide that you sell rocks and you're trying to make capital, but what are you doing then? Doing school plays? Is that
how you started? I told my mom like the Sears catalogs would come in the mail, and I was like, and I would show her the models in the cat and be like, "Mom, I can do that. They're just standing there with clothes. I can do that. You know, call up Sears, you know?" And I started telling my mom to call people and do so, you know? And so when we finally got settled in Athens, I started doing, community theater. I remember I played a frog, you know, in like a tiny little theater show. And I think I played Christmas Past in like a children's theater production of Christmas Carol. Christmas Carol and little stuff like that. But it was just kind of here and there, you know. And then what happened is I saw this contest for Showtime, the Showtime Kid Talent Quest.
Yeah.
They had like a children's hour and they wanted, you know, kids to introduce the movies. And I didn't really sing or dance or anything, but I love Saturday Night Live. I stayed up, you know, every night to watch Saturday Night Live. And so I tried to do these little skits on this huge video camera, you know, that it was immense. Sure. And I didn't know how to edit. So I would just press record and then my mom would press pause and I would change my clothes into the other character and then unpause, redo it or whatever. It was the most convoluted thing, but I made this crazy video and sent it in. And honestly, I think they were like, you know, they had all of these people who were singing and dancing and doing stuff. And then it was this, you know, probably this one kid who was doing weird comedy skits, pretending to be Rod Serling. It was just so, so probably weird. But I won that contest and they flew me to New York. Yeah. When I was, I don't know, 12. And,
my research says 14. The first annual Kid Talent Quest.
Okay.
But they flew you to New York. This is the first time you were in New York?
Maybe I was 13 when I recorded it. Yeah. First time in New York. The whole family went. I recorded it over all of it over a few days. And that was the thing. So I had started getting into this idea of of I loved Eddie Murphy. He was my favorite growing up because of Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood and Gumby and all of that from Saturday Night Live. And I would sneak and listen to his, you know, raunchy comedy shows. Just loved him. Wanted to be Eddie Murphy. And so I went to this camp. It was like a 2 week, maybe 3 week camp up in the mountains of South Carolina, Cullowhee, North Carolina. Okay. They had a talent contest, and one of the guys that I befriended who'd been there a few times, he had done a stand-up comedy routine, and I was joking with everybody at the lunch table, and he said, "Hey, can I use that in my comedy routine?" And I said, "No, I'm going to use it in my comedy routine." And so that was the first time I got on stage to do stand-up comedy, and I ended up winning the talent contest at the camp. And then, so at the second annual Showtime Kid Talent Quest, they had the other winners come up and do their talent. And I had just made a stupid video, so I didn't have any talent to, you know? So I started doing stand-up comedy, like in these malls, you know, at like, 13 or 14, I would say only 14 by then. And then I started going to comedy clubs and trying to get into comedy clubs. And they were like, "You can't come in here, kid. You're like a baby." But my mom was very persistent, and she found my who would become my Jewish grandmother, Edith Sims. She was a comedy booker who worked in Atlanta and New York for some reason. Okay. Yeah, and I went up and bombed the first time, and I came back, and she said, "I can't put you back on." And then I did some impressions of, oh my God, I did an impression of Bill Cosby, and I did an impression of Pat Robertson from the 700 Club. You know, so imagine like a black kid, 14-year-old black kid doing Pat Robertson. And yes, exactly. You know, barely open your eyes when you talk. And so she was like, okay, you can do Pat Robertson for everybody. And that night I killed, and she was like, I was like her new best friend. I would go up to New York for, I don't know, a couple of weeks, for a couple of summers, and do stand-up comedy at these different places in New York City.
Crazy.
At Stand-Up New York Comedy Store, at the Village Gate in the Village, a couple of divey places. I kind of, was just cultivating that performing thing. And then comedians started to depress the hell out of me. The comedians are an amazing group because they are wonderfully talented. I mean, I would sit there for weeks, and so there'd be a new crop of comedians that would come through every week, and I would sit at the bar and listen to them all and just think, oh my God, they're all so funny. They're all so great. You know, I want to, you know, learn to be like these guys. And they would come to the bar and talk to me, and some of them were positive. 10% of them were positive, and 90% were just mad that they hadn't been discovered yet. And I'm sitting at the bar, you know, having a Sprite, and they are drinking hard and being like, "Kid, are you going to take me with you when you get to be a big shot?" And I was like, "Sure." And they were like, "No, you won't. No, you won't. That's what Chris Rock said. No, you won't." You know, it was just, I was like, you know what? I think I'm going to find something better to do with my time. So I went back home and started doing theater more. And I auditioned for an art school. And that's where my theater bent really started. I went to Northside High School, School of the Arts, for a semester, because it was in Atlanta, and my folks lived in Athens. But I did it for a semester. And that's where I met our mutual professors,
Dale Moffat,
Charlie Helfert,
Dale Moffat. Right.
Yeah, yeah. I auditioned for them when I was in a junior in high school, and then when it came back around for me to find a place to go to college, I auditioned for them again. But that's where that relationship started, and I really, you know, develop that love of theater.
That is so crazy, though. The idea, as a 14-year-old, you're like in the middle of like hardcore stand-up culture. I mean, even just you saying, sitting at the bar, watching these guys and imagining that.
Yep.
I mean, your experience there.
I learned to play poker sitting at the bar at Stand Up New York Comedy Store. There was a bartender, and I hate that I can't remember his name, because he would play cards with me while he was dishing drinks or whatever. And this is a mantra that I try to live by. And he would always tell me, he was like, Kari, whatever you do, play with your balls. You win big, you lose big, just play with your balls. I never forget that. And it's like, if you're gonna do something, man,
my gosh,
go for it. Play with your balls.
Oh my gosh.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. That's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
Hey, this is Christina Quinn. I'm the host of Try This, the Washington Post's new series of audio courses. The idea behind Try This is to become better functioning humans without having to comb the internet for countless hours. In our first course, we learned how to sleep better. Now, we're going to learn how to make our friendships stronger. I'll offer expert tips that are doable, and I'll keep it short. So let's do this. Classes in session. Find Try This from the Washington Post wherever you listen.
There's two kinds of people in the world, people who love Health Aid kombucha and people who have never tried it. The bubbly mix of probiotic tea and refreshing juice is delicious and good for your gut health, with great flavors to choose from that you can't help but love. If you've never tried it before, maybe try a bottle or can of passion fruit tangerine or ginger lemon. Your taste buds and your gut will thank you. Look for the brown bottle with an anchor on it and try Health Aid kombucha today.
Health Aid kombucha.
The journey to a smoke-free future can be a long and winding road. But if you're ready for a change, consider taking Zyn for a spin. Zyn nicotine pouches offer a fresh way to discover your nicotine satisfaction. Anywhere, anytime. No smoke, no spit, and no lingering odor. Ready to start your new journey? Get in gear with the Zyn 10 Challenge. Enjoy Zyn nicotine pouches for 10 days and discover a fresher way to experience nicotine satisfaction. Anywhere, anytime. Here's how to get started with the Zyn 10 Challenge. Simply pick your strength and varieties online and check out. Once your Zyn nicotine pouches arrive in the mail, enjoy pure nicotine satisfaction at your leisure. After your 10-day trial, let us know what you think. If Zyn isn't for you, no hard feelings. It's that simple. Order online at Zyn.com, that's Zyn.com, to start your new journey today with the Zyn 10 Challenge. Warning, this product contains nicotine. Nicotine is an addictive chemical.
So you do theater, and yes, the two people Kari just mentioned, Charlie Helfert and Dale Moffat, were, well, they were the papas and the grandpas and the moms and everything at SMU.
The elder statesman.
Elder statesman. You auditioned to get into SMU, and spoiler alert, Kari and I ended up at college together. Now, Kari is significantly older. 1 year.
Yes, exactly.
But I mean, here's the thing. SMU is a conservatory training theater program. It was a conservatory training theater program. It still is.
Yeah.
So when you make the decision that you're going to audition and ultimately go to SMU, now things can be derailed just like with any college student, but you really are making a commitment at that point. You knew that this was what you wanted to do. Is that right?
Yeah. Well, here was the thing. I told myself the last couple of years of high school, you know, because I had won this contest and I had done, you know, I was doing stand up and, you know, and I was doing these different things. And so I was sort of a big deal, you know, in my high school, I guess, for having, you know, kind of stepped outside of our community and
having done something. Yeah.
Having done something. But I knew in my head, I mean, American Idol wasn't a thing yet, but I didn't want to be one of those people that, because everybody in their little small hometown told them that they were the most talented thing, that they were deluding themselves and we're going to, you know, go off with big dreams. And then, you know, Simon Cowell tells them, you know, that they have no idea what pitch is and never will. And so I told myself, I was like, Kari, you need more than just belief in yourself. You need corroboration that you're actually good at this. And I was like, you know what? I'm going to audition for the best schools in the country for theater. And if I get into those schools, then that means something, because it doesn't mean everything, but it means something, because when you're auditioning for a school, they're going to take a certain amount of kids. When you're auditioning for a role, they're taking one. So you know, it's like this is just preliminary. This doesn't mean right. that you got it, but it means you got a chance. And all I needed was a chance. And so I auditioned for, let's see, I didn't audition for like the North Carolina School of the Arts because my dad was a doctor and I had to go to like an actual university.
Okay.
Carnegie Mellon, I auditioned for, and then SMU and Florida State. I think that was it. And then I was like, you know what? If I don't get into any of those, then I'll know that means, you know what? You can have fun out here doing this, but let's not get crazy. And my fallback was, you know what? I could always teach history, because my favorite teachers of history, like, performed history. You know, it was like, you know, I remember one of my favorite teachers in high school was Mr. Cavalier, David Cavalier. And I mean, I don't know how many times he was, you know, standing on somebody's desk, literally captain my captain, you know what I mean? Just like, you know, preaching to the class. And I was like, you know, maybe that's as big as my audience is supposed to get, you know, but if I get into these places, then maybe I got a shot to do more. And I got in everywhere that I auditioned, but the cheapest place to go was Florida State because it was a state school. And and so I sent my dorm deposit to Florida State, and then Charlie Helfert called from SMU and said, "Hey, you know, are you coming down for Mustang Days to check out the school?" And SMU, even in those days, was not inexpensive to go to SMU. And I didn't even think about going to SMU. I was like, "No, my folks aren't paying, you know. I mean, my dad's a doctor, but he's a pediatrician. You know what I mean? He's right. taking like, you know, he's taking $10 copays. You know, we're doing all right. We're not living high on the hog." And so I was like, I got to pay for this myself. But little did I know that SMU had quite the endowment. And I swear it was like, I felt like I was getting recruited for a football team, like a college football team. Like I got flown in. They showed me, you know, the facility, you know, I mean, it was like, I was like, "Whoa, this is amazing." And then I got there and all the students were like, they were like, "Man, hold out for a full scholarship. They've got the money. You hold out, dude." It's you know, and they're all telling me to hold out. And I go running back to my mom, who's having a meeting with Charlie. And she was like, "Well, if you want to go here," I was like, "Yeah, I want to go here." She was like, "Well, it's all set up." And I was like, "Did you hold out?" She was like, "Well, they gave me like an 80% thing." And I was like, "Oh, mom, we could have gotten the full. And she felt so guilty for so long. Cause she was like, because of course every year, because if you get a full scholarship, if tuition goes up, they still pay the full thing. If you get an 80% scholarship,
dollar amount. That's
right. And then no, if that goes up, it don't go up 80%. You just got to start. So, yeah. So eventually I did pay off my student loans and everything, but yeah, that was my,
it's very interesting. I've never heard that story from you before. And I don't know if I've publicly told this either, but like you, my dad was a doctor, right? So you hear doctor, but my dad was a doctor at Emory University.
Yeah.
He was, you know, a teacher and, you know, had made that decision for his family and because of certain situations had to pay a lot of money for me to go to high school there in Atlanta.
Right.
And basically said, because he's on staff at Emory, I have a free ride at Emory. Emory University, an amazing school. My sister
incredible
went.
Incredible school. Yeah.
A room, my board, like it was like everything. And so when it came time, he was like, I really think you should go check out Emory's theater department again. And we went to a show and I'm like, Dad, this is not. And he said, okay, well, you know, the offer here is free. So I traveled to SMU, had a very similar experience, which was just like, guys, I'm sold. And just so you know, it would be like, you know, he mentioned football and I've used that analogy all the time. People don't understand, like you're doing plays, you're kind of like a football player or a basketball player. Like you're constantly working within the theater for this conservatory training program.
Literally, I almost never saw a football game at SMU because we were always in rehearsal. We were always in rehearsal. Yeah, you know,
well,
it was
now,
like
I did do that. But yes, I hear a point. No, but your point is right. And it's hard for people to kind of comprehend, like, wait, what? Theater? Like you're
sure.
But no, they have an incredible endowment and they are incredibly supportive of not just theater, but all of the arts. The Meadows School of the Arts there at SMU is a fantastic place. So
I've done some amazing theater shows. Still some of the most incredible, like pyrotechnic, you know, stuff that I've ever seen done on a stage was at my college. They have, there's like an oil spring, like flowing, like right up through the Greer Garson, you know, thrust stage at SMU, just spewing out money to be spent on these theater productions. It is incredible the amount of money that they put towards this program. And I imagine it is hard to believe. I went back a couple of years ago for actually a film festival and went back to SMU and saw a show and was just shocked again that I was like, wow, they're doing five performances of this and then it's going away. And I was just amazed at the production value that they put on at that school. If you get a chance to go to SMU for theater, you really should go.
Yeah, that's the sum total of it. It's like Oregon, like because of all the Nike money. Like if you're an athlete and you go to Oregon, you see the workout facilities and the locker room and everything that they have at their disposal there because of the. It's kind of like that. I mean, I went to USC, Florida State, you know, a bunch of both public and private schools, and then showed up. Coming from USC in Los Angeles through Dallas, and you step onto SMU's campus and you see their like four fully functional stages of different varieties. And you're like, well, this is kind of a no brainer if they'll take me. It's like that.
Yeah.
It's crazy. You've mentioned this before, your dad, who I met a number of times, just amazing. Amazing guy. He was not originally a big fan of your acting career until he saw you in a production of Hamlet in your 20s. Is this right?
Yeah. Like I said, my dad's a doctor and, you know, very practical sort of fellow. My mom was always the one who was kind of pushing me towards my arts thing. My mom was had a biology degree and ended up having an arts degree. She was going to be a biology illustrator and ended up getting her master's. And it's an amazing story. I have to tell you that story as well about my mom. She years ago, as I was being born, was about to graduate from Mercer University in Macon. Georgia. Yeah. And she had her biology degree, but she was pregnant with me. My dad was already in medical school in Augusta. And so they were living apart from each other. And she was going to give birth right around the time of graduation. And my mom was what you would call, a troublemaker. She was she was a bit of an activist, you know. Imagine growing up, you know, as a teenager in the 60s. And her paintings reflected that those sorts of things. And the president of the art department, the dean of the art department, called a lot of her paintings too controversial to be shown in gallery. Mm-hmm. And in order to graduate, she had to be a part of the gallery showing, and he wouldn't let her become a part of the gallery showing. And in so doing, she was not allowed to graduate with her arts major, although she did graduate with her biology major. But a cool story is at the age of 72, she finally walked and got her degree. She was, as she does, you know, as talkative Peyton's, she was sitting at a bench at the Atlanta airport waiting to get driven back home, and was sitting with a woman who happened to be a professor at Mercer University. And she was like, you know, I never got my arts degree. They wouldn't give it to me. And that started a conversation. And so that was a big wrong that was finally righted.
Wow.
And just a few months before my dad died. But my mom has always been a fighter and always been a proponent of the arts. And my dad was always, you know, supportive of the arts. But he also was like, you know what? It's also a good idea to get a chemistry minor, maybe.
Right.
So you can work in a lab, Kari. And I would tell him, I said, Dad, you know, people like me getting a minor in chemistry and working in a lab, that's the way scandals happen. That's the way the wrong person goes to jail for a crime they didn't commit. I'm not the one to do that. And so he was as supportive as he could be. And by saying that, I mean, he just didn't say anything, you know,
right.
Like for a long time, I would just not hear anything from him, as far as, you know, my major, of choice, was concerned. And, I remember I took business calculus at SMU, just so that my dad would feel like I was taking a class that sounded like actual college, because you know, the classes that we took, and you know, our first major, like it's the tent pole class that you take as a freshman at SMU, you know, with Dale Moffitt, is called experiencing. So I'm going to tell my dad, who was a chemistry major, who like literally like made like patents for, you know, before, like while he was still in school, before he ended up becoming a doctor, you know, he was like, what are you taking? Your class, you're taking experiencing movement for theater. You know what I mean? These are the things that I have to tell him. So I took business calculus just so that it would feel like I was actually taking a college course. And, I was actually pretty good at business calculus.
Okay.
Somehow I got a B+ in there. I don't understand how. I'm some sort of savant, but yeah. No, my dad was less than encouraging at first. And then I did a production of Hamlet, actually not at SMU, but with a bunch of, friends and graduates of SMU. I played, Horatio. You know, I mean, I'm the guy who gets down on his knees and talks to a ghost, you know, and I remember in that moment, you know, with like tears in my eyes and pleading to this non-existent ghost in a dark room. And my folks, you know, who, you know, rarely made it all the way from Georgia to Texas, came to see that production. And this, you know, it was a little black box theater production, you know, not all of the bells and whistles that we were talking about before. And I just remember my mom coming back afterwards, and she was so excited. You know, she was like, Kari, your dad, after he saw you in that show, And she would never tell me, she literally should. And I never told you this before, but whenever somebody was asking, you know, what's Kari doing? He was like, oh, I don't know. He's waiting tables or something and doing some theater thing. And my mom was so good. She never told me. I never knew that my dad would, you know, disparage me in any way, you know, right. as far as me not being that chemistry major. But but he was just, you know, didn't understand what I was doing. But she said ever since he saw that production of Hamlet, he would go on and on and on about me being an actor and how I was a great actor. And he was so excited to see what I'm going to do next. At that point, you know, it's funny because that kind of stuff kind of rolls off my back a little bit. But like as far as, you know, my dad being, you know, not the most vocal supporter, you know, because that's just my dad. Right. And I expect that. But knowing that he started changing the way that he spoke to people about me, that was kind of all the validation I needed, you know,
right.
like from then on, it was like, it's time to go to LA. It's time to kick this thing into gear. And I never had a lack of confidence.
Right.
You know, I mean, I was pretty cocky already, but that's all I needed.
That's awesome.
I knew that that's awesome. Yeah. I told myself when I drove to LA, I put in this CD of John Lennon, Wheels Go Round and Round. Do you know that song? You know?
Yeah.
Starts off, people say I'm crazy doing what I'm doing. You know, and they were always, everybody was always like, oh, it's a horrible time to go to LA. It's not a good time to go to LA. And I would tell them, and I would just say, you know, it's a horrible time for 97% of the people who moved to LA, you know? But for 3%, it's the right time to go to LA. And I'm going to bet on being that 3%. And that John Lennon and my dad, man, it was the three of us driving to LA, baby.
Here you go.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with a king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets. If you don't win your first bet, that's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
There's a lot happening these days, but I have just the thing to get you up to speed on what matters without taking too much of your time. The 7 from the Washington Post is a podcast that gives you the 7 most important and interesting stories, and we always try to save room for something fun. You get it all in about 7 minutes or less. I'm Hannah Jewell. I'll get you caught up with the 7 every weekday. So follow the 7 right now.
There's a lot of pros to drinking Health Aid kombucha. No cons that I can think of. Pro, amazing taste. Pro, pairs well with anything. Pro, probiotic. That's a literal pro. And it's deliciously refreshing. It's the perfect pairing to your meal or great on its own, whether you're having Pink Lady Apple, Berry Lemonade, or one of the other great flavors. It's the perfect swap for soda or alcohol. Make it part of your daily routine. Look for the brown bottle with an anchor on it and try Health Aid Kombucha today.
The journey to a smoke-free future can be a long and winding road. But if you're ready for a change, consider taking Zyn for a spin. Zyn nicotine pouches offer a fresh way to discover your nicotine satisfaction. Anywhere, anytime. No smoke, no spit, and no lingering odor. Ready to start your new journey? Get in gear with the Zyn 10 Challenge. Enjoy Zyn nicotine pouches for 10 days and discover a fresher way to experience nicotine satisfaction anywhere, anytime. Here's how to get started with the Zyn 10 Challenge. Simply pick your strength and varieties online and check out. Once your Zyn nicotine pouches arrive in the mail, enjoy pure nicotine satisfaction at your leisure. After your 10-day trial, let us know what you think. If Zyn isn't for you, no hard feelings. It's that simple. Order online at Zyn.com, that's Z-Y-N.com, to start your new journey today with the Zyn 10 Challenge. Warning, this product contains nicotine. Nicotine is an addictive chemical.
You moved to LA, as you said.
Yeah.
Here's the thing people, I think, don't realize. Being an actor in Los Angeles, being an actor, period, in film and television, is very difficult. There is one thing that is decidedly more difficult. And very quickly, after moving to Los Angeles, you become a voice actor. And now let me say this to people. It's hard for people to understand. Because when you're on a television show, you are seen. And there's things like exclusivity. You can only do one show at a time. People will get tired of seeing your face. And so they have to, whoever the they is, one must focus on, in general, an individual project at once. The thing about voice acting is that it's the most difficult thing to get into because casting directors, directors, voice directors, studios fall in love with people who are reliable and good. And every show they do, they just hire the same people. So it's incredibly difficult to break in, yet you break in very quickly. How was that experience for you, and how did you feel like it compared to the theater work that you had been mostly focused on before?
It kind of harkened back to the theater stuff, because the thing is that coming to LA, it has so much to do with what you look like, you know?
Right.
Even in the breakdown that you get, you know, it's like man, female, you know, Caucasian, African American, blah blah blah. There are all of these stipulations about how you look that go into which role that you're going to take. And even for me getting here, you know, I'm 5'10", 170 pounds. I'm not a big, you know, brawny black dude. And there are so many parts where when you're building the team, like that tank dude, like that B.A. Baracus, Mr. T, right. You know, that right. the big intimidating black guy who's on the team is, you know, that's just not me, you know? And, right. There are a lot of things that even being, you know, young African American, but still I'm not the right type. You know, I'm a whole lot more, you know, Disney kid than kind of your hard, intimidated sort of dude. And so I couldn't, you know, break into, you know, those things. There were still plenty of things for me to audition for, but sure. With voiceover, you know, it was like the shackles are taken off and you can be anything, not just like a big brawny dude, but I can be monsters. I can be mice. I can be anything. And that reminded me of theater.
Right.
You could be anything that the imagination desired. I played the creature in Frankenstein once, and I played him even though I was, you know, I was little. I just imagined myself as armed to the teeth, like I always had, you know, some kind of power to be able to just snap someone's neck. Like I had sometimes I would just think of myself as sitting there with a big gun in my hand. And that's what was intimidating to the people around me. And so I walked with this swagger and this invulnerability, and it had everything to do with my own imagination, and I could do anything on stage, and the people would go along with it. You know, because, you know, if you gave them the reason, then they would go along with it. And in voiceover, you know, you're only limited by your vocal maneuverability. So that's what I think, you know, really helped, is that my theater experience and training, you know, gave me, you know, this. I mean, the first time I auditioned, it was so freeing. I slapped the microphone and slapped it because I was just so, I felt so alive, you know, that you could kind of do and be anything. But the funny thing is about, it's another SMU connection that got me that first audition and that first job, which was Cyborg from Teen Titans. I had known longer than you, for a year longer than I've known you. I had known one of my best friends, David Slack.
Yep.
Was a theater major at SMU as well. And he moved to LA before I did and started assisting and writing on cartoons. He like Jackie Chan Adventures and Men in Black. And he was always telling me, you know what, Kari, you should get into voiceover. I didn't know how to get into voiceover. You know, everybody says you should get into it. How do you get in? I asked my agents and they were like, oh, you don't even want to try. You can't. I mean, they're my agents. And they were right. Like, yeah, it's impossible. You can't, you know, you have to get a job before they'll give you a job. It's crazy. But I would just always kind of ask. And then finally, David called me up and he was like, Kari, I've never done this before, but I'm on this show. I'm like the main writer on this show. And I think this part is perfect for you. And so I'm going to try and get you an audition. And I was like, okay. So I sent him my resume and headshot as if that mattered at all, you know, in voiceover, your headshot. Cause I'd never done it before. I don't know.
Right.
But they called me and let me audition. And I was just, first of all, I remembered the character from my own comic books, you know, this Cyborg character. Cause I remember, you know, you look in comic books and you look for any kind of similarity, at least I did, you know, to be like, ooh, that's me. I'm going to be that guy, you know? And for me, right. It was always Spider-Man because he was skinny and a nerd. And he came alive when he put on a mask. And I was like, dude, that's me. That's me. And so Spider-Man's always been my favorite. But of the Teen Titans, on that cover, the black dude, that's me. So, you know, so I would play Cyborg in a playground.
Right.
And I went to audition for this in at this cool outdoor mall. Sherman Oaks Galleria in Los Angeles is like this open air mall that you walk through, but there's a part of it that used to be the main headquarters of Warner Brothers Animation Studios. And it was like glass and the lobby went up like 7 floors. You know, it looked like one of those fancy, you know, high rise, you know, San Francisco, Silicon Valley sort of situations.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. And it was just kind of like you open the door and you're like, whoa, you know, it's like the Willy Wonka of animation. And and I go in there to audition and I look in the lobby and every black dude from 90s television is sitting there, you know, it's like all the guys from Living Color, Urkel's over here, you know, I mean, you know what I mean? It's like cockroaches sitting over there from the Cosby Show. It was like, they're all sitting there. And I was like, well, I'm in the right place and I probably won't get this, but this is really exciting. And I went in there and just had a ball. My face hurt from smiling after that audition. I just thought it was so much fun. And the casting director, the legendary casting director, Andrea Romano, asked me what I'd done before. And I'd done a video game in Dallas, Texas once. And I remember she said, never heard of it. And I was like, yeah, yeah, you probably hadn't. And, but I was just so excited and walked out of there feeling great. And then a couple of weeks later, David called me up and he was like, Kari, I think you might get it. It's like down to you and like a couple of people. I think you could get it, man. He was like, I would be in the halls and they'd be talking about like different people or whatever. And they were like, yeah, we really like this Kari Payton guy. And David would be like, that's my friend. That's my friend. And he was so excited, bro. And they were like, really? Yeah. And so the story goes that Sam Register, who is a vice president of animation at Warner Brothers, asked for the three best options and to leave them unlabeled just A, B, and C. And he's the reason that I got the job of Cyborg. David Slack and Sam Register. He picked me. I don't know who the other two were, but life changing.
But B and C. They were B and C, and yeah, that's all that matters.
They were B and C. Yeah.
I didn't realize.
But if not for that, I'd still be wondering how to get into voiceover. If not for that.
No, I didn't realize that was your first audition.
My first audition.
I mean, you don't understand. He just came from a session. He's works 19 hours a day just recording things. I still can't figure it out. I get one job and I'm over the moon in voiceover. This guy is doing it all the time. I didn't realize that was your first job. So you have been, I'm trying to do the math, but you probably know. Because, by the way, it's Teen Titans. It's Teen Titans Go. It's Lego DC Comics. It's Batman Beleaguered. It's Justice League Action. He has voiced Cyborg in all of these shows. How many years now have you been, I mean, it's fair to say, the voice of Cyborg? Is this 20 years?
It'll be officially 20 years, I think, in August. In August, because we started recording Teen Titans, the first show, in March or something, and then it came out at Comic-Con, at San Diego Comic-Con. I'd never been to Comic-Con before. And we went down there and they played it there. It's either 19 or 20 years. I have to check to be sure. But yeah, wow. Yeah, it's been pretty much two decades. I know, it's crazy. What's crazy to me is that there are kids who think about Teen Titans the way that we thought about Scooby-Doo. You know, that like it was always around, you know, that we've been around that long, that kids grew up and now their kids watch Teen Titans Go. That's the thing that kind of blows my mind, that we've been around that long.
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
Such a great story. I did not realize that was the first one. I knew first David one. Slack had helped you out, but that's unbelievable. And I love also that he did that. He said label A, B, C, mm-hmm. and let me just pick the voice. Because ultimately what their name is doesn't matter. They're either going to deliver it or they're not, and gave you a shot. I love that.
Yeah.
We have to discuss your latest triumph, The Walking Dead, King Ezekiel. Would you say this is your crowning on screen moment thus far? Getting on
absolutely without
the
question.
Walking Dead, one of the biggest TV franchises ever.
Yeah,
were you a fan of the show before joining?
Yeah, I was a fan of the show. I was a frustrated fan of the show. Because the main character Rick, in order to have a show that stays compelling for so many years, you kind of have to have a leader who makes poor decisions. Rick makes poor decisions all the time. He saves people that should never have been saved. He, it's like he walks into a place that seems idyllic and fine, and next thing you know, it's overrun with zombies and the walls are falling down. It's just like, you know, I would always scream at the TV and just be like, don't listen to him. Just because he's got that sheriff's uniform on, don't listen to him. I kid, but I don't. Andy Lincoln, who plays him, is one of the finest actors I have ever worked with and one of the most incredible people I've ever worked with. And so I have this love in my heart for Andy as Rick, but Rick himself would frustrate the hell out of me before I became Ezekiel on the show. But I couldn't stop watching. I would get up and walk out, and then I would come back and turn it on again. It's such an amazing show. Yeah. No, I was a big fan.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with a king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets. If you don't win your first bet, that's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
There's a lot happening these days, but I have just the thing to get you up to speed on what matters without taking too much of your time. The 7 from the Washington Post is a podcast that gives you the 7 most important and interesting stories, and we always try to save room for something fun. You get it all in about 7 minutes or less. I'm Hannah Jewell. I'll get you caught up with the 7 every weekday. So follow the 7 right now.
There's two kinds of people in the world, people who love Health Aid kombucha and people who have never tried it. The bubbly mix of probiotic tea and refreshing juice is delicious and good for your gut health with great flavors to choose from that you can't help but love. If you've never tried it before, maybe try a bottle or can of passion fruit tangerine or ginger lemon. Your taste buds and your gut will thank you. Look for the brown bottle with an anchor on it and try Health Aid kombucha today.
Health Aid kombucha.
The journey to a smoke-free future can be a long and winding road. But if you're ready for a change, consider taking Zyn for a spin. Zyn nicotine pouches offer a fresh way to discover your nicotine satisfaction. Anywhere, anytime. No smoke, no spit, and no lingering odor. Ready to start your new journey? Get in gear with the Zyn 10 Challenge. Enjoy Zyn nicotine pouches for 10 days and discover a fresher way to experience nicotine satisfaction. Anywhere, anytime. Here's how to get started with the Zyn 10 Challenge. Simply pick your strength and varieties online and check out. Once your Zyn nicotine pouches arrive in the mail, enjoy pure nicotine satisfaction at your leisure. After your 10-day trial, let us know what you think. If Zyn isn't for you, no hard feelings. It's that simple. Order online at Zyn.com, that's Zyn.com, to start your new journey today with the Zyn 10 Challenge. Warning, this product contains nicotine. Nicotine is an addictive chemical.
Tell me about your audition process. How did that come about?
Well, let me tell you, Brian.
Yeah.
I want to tell you even before the audition process.
Okay.
I came to LA and in my head, I was like, you come to LA, this is how it works. You get into pilot season. You go and you audition for pilots. You get a pilot. And then, you know, you work that pilot. It gets on the air, it becomes a big hit, and that's how my career is going to go. I'm going to land a pilot one way or another, drama, comedy, doesn't matter. That's how you do it. And for years coming to LA, I got here when I was like 29. So for almost 15 years. I in those 15 years, I did 9 pilots.
You did a pilot almost every year, yes.
Almost every year. And I was lucky to get those. But I was, but it was also became really frustrating because I was like, you know, I got the, there's one show that I got on that was canceled after one episode on ABC called Emily's Reasons Why Not. There was another show that actually was on for a season or two, but I got fired after the pilot, and 7 others that never even made the light of day, and I remember sitting and thinking to myself, maybe a pilot isn't what I need, you know? and I would always have these, I would always say these things to myself. I was like, you know, at the beginning of the year or at some point throughout the year, I always say, I need a job that feeds my belly and a job that feeds my soul. And sometimes those jobs are very different. And so every once in a while, you get a job that does both at the same time. It feeds your belly and it feeds your soul. And that those are the really lucky ones. But I would kind of tell myself, you know, that this is the plan moving forward. And as long as you've got a job that feeds your belly and a job that feeds your soul, you're going to be fine. And I had always told myself, all right, this is, you know, we're going to go get another pilot. We're going to go get another pilot. And I started telling myself, I don't think I need a pilot. I think that's just been banging my head up against a wall. And I told my manager, who happens to be your manager as well.
Thanks to you.
Ted Gekas and Danielle Rivera. But you know what I love about the fact that I introduced you guys is that there is nothing better than people thinking that you're doing them a favor when actually you just see something that is going to be magic, you know? And I've always seen magic with you, Brian. And as soon as I met Ted and Danielle, I was like, you know what? When you said you were looking for somebody to represent you, I was like, I know this is gonna work. It's my happiness and my pleasure. But yes, I told our manager, Ted Gekas, Danielle Rivera, I said, I don't think we need a pilot. We need an introduction. We need, you know, because I've been doing this, doing this for over a decade now, and I've been very successful in voiceover and stuff, but nobody knows my face. They still don't know my face. And I just need an introduction. I need someone to say, and here's Kari. This is who you've been looking for. And I never forget it. I was watching all of these zombies, you know, walking this parade at San Diego Comic-Con. And I thought to myself, and I was actually thinking more about like Star Trek and that kind of thing. And I was like, I need one of these Comic-Con shows. One of these kind of sci-fi sort of things, because man, those fans are, I mean, once you got them, they love you, you know? And I just thought, I was like, I need an introduction. I don't need a pilot. I just need to get on one of these Comic-Con shows. And the next pilot season, I remember going through and auditioning for a few things and not really liking anything except for this one show called The Good Place. I read that pilot. I thought it was brilliant. I was like, this is it. This is the one. And so I went in there. I met Michael Schur.
Mm-hmm.
I did the audition and I made the cameraman laugh. And I was like, it doesn't get any better than that. You made the cameraman break. If somebody actually breaks in the audition, that's just sitting back there, you know you had a good audition.
Right.
And so I walked out of there feeling so good, and I never heard from him. I never heard from him. And I was so bummed. I was so bummed because I really thought that I had knocked it out of the park. And I was just kind of hanging my head about it and thinking, damn, I really wanted that show. And then a month and a half later came the audition for King Ezekiel. And had I gotten The Good Place, I obviously, you know, would not have auditioned, you know, and would not have gotten King Ezekiel. And so, you know, everything happens for a reason.
Everything happens for a reason.
But that was like the first time in like 3 years that I didn't book a pilot. And I'd kind of, you know, when you're in the middle of trying to get a pilot, you kind of forget about that whole, you know, conversation you have with your manager about, I don't think I need a pilot. You know, the pilots come along and yeah. Oh man, this is so weird. I remember I auditioned and was, testing for another pilot that I really didn't want.
Okay.
And I just didn't, you know, cause I was thinking in my head, I was just like, I always extrapolate this out over the years. And I was like, is this what you want to do over the course of many, many, many years? And I didn't know if it was for me, you know, but at the same time, you know, I'm not Kari Payton that anybody knows except, you know, really, really, you know, intense cartoon fans, you know, and I was like, Kari, if they want you to test, you should go test for this job, you know? And I remember feeling so weird testing and not really having my heart in it. And then The Good Place coming along and I went full bore and just nothing. But then, you know, you get what you want. And I got my introduction. I got an introduction with a tiger sitting next to me. Yeah, I mean, yeah. Honestly, you couldn't ask for a better introduction.
No. Did you work with the tiger?
Never.
Did you?
There was no tiger. That tiger was from The Life of Pi. You remember the movie, right? The Life of Pi?
Yeah.
Yeah, what happened is, well, you know that the studio that built that CGI tiger, like, went broke because they put everything into that, but they also kind of lowballed the price so that they could get the job in the first place. And so they built this beautiful tiger in the computer, obviously. And then it went broke and they had to sell that information for that tiger and they sold it to AMC. And so AMC took that Life of Pi tiger and turned it into Shiva.
Wow. Did not know that. There's some behind the scenes knowledge.
Crazy.
How long would it take you to get ready there? Your hair, your wardrobe.
By the time we got, you know, good at it, it was maybe 40 minutes, 45 minutes.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. When we got good at it. Now
it took me an hour and a half to work in an office.
Yeah, nah, man, we had it down. Vincent Gideon was my hairstylist and wig stylist, and he would glue it onto my head every day. Vincent Gideon, he's like a legend in Atlanta, Georgia. You know, he works on, you know, all the big stuff, Marvel stuff, but for the last 10 years, it's been The Walking Dead, and he would get that thing on, and then Scott Edo, who was the head of the makeup department, who would finish up cleaning me up. And then if we had more things to do, it would take more time. If I had cuts on my face or more special effects stuff, which would be Greg Nicotero and his team, then it would take a little longer. But by the time we got going, we were a finely tuned machine. It was 45 minutes. Yeah.
How was it for you showing up on, again, such a successful show, most watched show in, well, I don't even know if they call it basic cable anymore, but
right,
with the cast, the crew, it's a well-oiled machine, and you come in. How was it for you those first days or weeks?
It was interesting because the way The Walking Dead works, when they introduce a new character, it's almost like they give you the episode.
Right.
It didn't feel like somebody else's show. It felt like my show, and I didn't have time to worry. I had too much work to do, you know?
Right.
And
makes sense.
Yeah. And I just, you know, I had these big speeches. I had, you know, a lot to do and say. And so that first episode, they kind of whisked me into Atlanta. I remember I told someone that I was shooting something in Atlanta, and they said, "Is it The Walking Dead?" And it was a big secret. Nobody was supposed to know that it was me because, you know, there was all of the speculation of all of these amazing actors who were supposed to get this job. And I was like, no, man, it's just little old me. And at that point, every announcement on The Walking Dead was like a big secret that they wanted to wait till Comic-Con to bust out. And so I remember telling them, no, it's not The Walking Dead. And after that, I didn't tell anybody else that I got that job because as soon as I mentioned Atlanta, first thing that people think of is Walking Dead. And so I started telling people that, yeah, I'm in Vancouver. I told everybody I was in Vancouver, shooting in Vancouver. My parents,
really?
I didn't tell my mom because my mom, I love her to death. She's gotten better. But at the time, she could not keep a secret to save her life. So yeah, no telling my mom. But Yeah, but my dad's a vault. So I told my dad, and my dad would always talk about the fact that, you know, he was the last one to know. So I felt good about telling him that, you know, and he was the first one to know. And I always had a little wink and a smile with him for a few months. There was even a time we were on family vacation after I got the job, and my mom is sitting there in the kitchen making something, and she doesn't look at me, and she just says, "Kari, I feel like there's something that you're not telling me. I don't know what it is, but I feel like there's something that you're not telling me." And my dad was standing next to her, and he just looked at me, and I looked at him, and I said, yeah, Mom, there's something I'm not telling you, but, you know, you can't keep a secret. And she was like, "Yeah, I know. Well, tell me when you can." And both me and my dad just went, "Yeah." It was like, man, that mama's intuition is real. But yeah. So for months, I couldn't tell anyone that I was doing this because I shot the first episode in May, and then I didn't shoot another episode for many months. So I come back to LA, you know, and I go on vacation for the summer. I do a little this or that, but not until July, at the end of July, when they do their big trailer and they reveal, you know, me and the tiger, nobody has any idea. So it was very clandestine. I had this big wig on, so they would throw a tarp over me or a blanket or something like that. Even when I was getting in and out of the van, going to locations, you know, it was it was a very weird feeling and situation. But yeah, we kept the secret.
You kept the secret.
But to answer your question, I didn't feel nervous. I didn't feel like I had time to feel nervous. And also, I felt like I understood Ezekiel so well, you know, this kind of theatrical presence, this guy who was faking it until he made it. And I had done all of that voiceover for like 10, you know, 12 years. And before that, in my 20s, I did all of that Shakespeare, all of that theater. And it was like those two things came together because in the script, it never said that he changed his voice. His body language changed. But to me, the first thing I thought was that his voice changed, that he spoke with a certain, you know, in platitudes, but underneath, yeah, you know, afterwards it was just, you know, and the voice change was the difference. The voice change is what, you know, perked people up. And I think that's why I got the job, you know?
Yeah. All of those years, all of that, those jobs leading you, training you in a way for this,
yeah,
your biggest, yeah, job. Obviously, The Walking Dead means, as you said before, so much to so many people. There's the history, yeah, the books, the story. You, as King Ezekiel, obviously have become a fan favorite. What are some of your favorite storylines?
Oh my gosh. There's so many, man. I mean, I obviously love Ezekiel's arc and where he's gone, but I really love Eugene. Eugene was, you know, he is just a quirky liar who over the course of many years has become this really incredibly intricate, you know, human being on so many levels. And Josh McDermott, who I was lucky enough to get to work with a lot the last couple of years, has just been amazing. And I think his work has been amazing. There's so many. Oh my God. I mean, to work, yeah, with Lenny James, who plays Morgan on the show, and he now is on Fear the Walking Dead. But you know, that to be that close to these incredible talents. You know, Melissa McBride, who's literally so sensitive to her environment. It's uncanny. I remember there was a moment that they wanted me to be sitting on my throne at this moment where I was feeling depressed. And I was like, there's no way I can sit on that throne after everything that he's gone through. But the script called for it. And they were like, well, can you get up on stage? And I was like, I can't see him walking up there. I can't see him crawling up there. And Melissa just, she was like, Kari, the rug and there was the hair from Shiva, the tiger. This is after the tiger had been killed. Mm-hmm. And there was and we had this animatronic tiger that we almost never used, but we would put it there, you know, as a placeholder a lot of times. And but the hair on the rug where she sat was still there. And man, I got so emotional all of a sudden, and it was just like it was the rug, and it made sense. And I crawled over to it, and I never got in the chair on the throne. I just sat down next to it and just played with the hair on that rug. And, you know, it's like, hell, any of us ever, you know, lost a beloved pet, you know, it's just like, it's like, there it is, you know. But right. Yeah, just so many incredible talents. And by that, I mean, Melissa's like one of the best acting teachers I've ever had, you know, and I got paid for the class. It's so cool. Just, I don't know. Just That's thinking awesome. About, you know, these moments of clarity.
Yeah.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. That's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
Finding the right news podcast can feel like dating. It seems promising until you start listening.
When you hit play on Post Reports, you'll get fascinating conversations and sometimes a little fun, too. I'm Martine Powers.
And I'm Elahe Azadi. Martine and I are the hosts of Post Reports. The show comes out every weekday from The Washington Post.
You can follow and listen to Post Reports wherever you get your podcasts. It'll be a match, I promise.
There's two kinds of people in the world, people who love Health Aid kombucha and people who have never tried it. The bubbly mix of probiotic tea and refreshing juice is delicious and good for your gut health with great flavors to choose from that you can't help but love. If you've never tried it before, maybe try a bottle or can of passion fruit tangerine or ginger lemon. Your taste buds and your gut will thank you. Look for the brown bottle with an anchor on it and try Health Aid kombucha today.
Health Aid kombucha.
If you're a smoker or dipper looking to make a change, you really only need one reason to do it. But with Zyn nicotine pouches, you can find many. Not only did Zyn create the first ever nicotine pouch, we're still America's number one choice for smoke-free, spit-free nicotine satisfaction. It could be because Zyn is made with only 6 simple ingredients, including naturally derived nicotine salt. Or maybe it's because Zyn is the only nicotine pouch with a 10-day trial. For anyone worried Zyn won't cut it like traditional tobacco, just ask one of the millions of people who have achieved lasting change. You have lots of options when it comes to nicotine satisfaction, but there's only one Zyn. Find your Zyn online or in a store near you at zyn.com/find. That's zyn.com/find. Warning, this product contains nicotine. Nicotine is an addictive chemical.
I don't think this is a secret. You've just recently finished filming the series finale. Mm-hmm. You've already talked about the secrets. Any hints about what's coming next, or do we just need to wait?
Fuck you, Brian. Thank you. You know better. You of all people know better.
Yeah, listen.
Yeah, you won't get a thing out of me, buddy.
I know.
I sweated too much in that wig to tell you a damn thing. You're gonna see it in all of its glory and all of its humidity.
Everybody will be watching everything. Exactly.
Yeah, no. I have been so good about not saying anything. I'm so excited for everybody to see what's coming up, and it's going to be a beautiful, you know, it's not really an ending. It's just any good show, you know, you've got your imagination goes wild as to what comes next, and there's plenty coming next.
Well, there's 47 spinoffs. They're talking about
exactly
one for everybody. What about King Ezekiel?
I mean, anything's possible. I you know, in this business, I hold out hope that that's not the last time I put that wig on. But right. You know, also, you know, nothing is promised, and you know, you got to move on to the next job. We're both been very lucky that we could, you know, sit on shows that had a, you know, a long life. But for the most part, you know, besides those, you know, most jobs come and go in this biz, and you just got to keep reworking it. And so, yeah. So I'll keep my fingers crossed, but at the same time, I look forward to the next thing that comes out, whatever it may be.
Yeah. You're so good at evading the question. I have one more for you. Any thoughts on a reboot for The Office?
Oh yeah. Is that going to happen? It absolutely is going to happen. Kevin will be put in charge, and I have said this for years, and it is not just because I've known you, you know, since the beginning of time. I have always thought, as soon as Michael left, I thought to myself, I was like, the thing that made that work is that you put someone in charge who has no business being in charge, and Pam and Jim have to, you know, with duct tape and, you know, and glue, try to hold this thing together. And I was like, what if they just took an aptitude test or did an interview, and somehow they did it sort of with Robert California, where for a moment, Robert California thought that Kevin might be the smartest person in the room. And I was like, oh God, please go with that. Go with that. Make him the one in charge. I wanted it so bad, because not only that I thought it would be hilarious, but I think that people still don't realize the incredible talent that is inside of one Brian Baumgartner. I have personally seen you play so many different and varied characters, and for you to play Kevin so well, that I feel like if you stepped into one of those other characters from, you know, that, you know, starts with Kevin, people would lose their minds. I have always said this. I'm telling you, it's going to happen at some point.
But, you said the script, you know,
this
really well.
This just sounds like gushing, but you can tell that I mean what I say. I don't just bullshit.
Well,
there are pregnant pauses when I don't believe something, but this I believe.
Thank you. Thank you very much for that. That was not expected nor written, but I will send you.
I will
send you a check.
I'll cash it.
I do want to mention to you, well, first off, congratulations on the end of The Walking Dead. I'm very happy for you and to see what comes for you next. I also do want to mention that this is June, which is Pride Month, and you have been a big ally of the LGBTQ community. And you have a son, Carter, who is now in that community. You want to tell me a little bit about his journey and your specific connection now to this community?
Yeah. No, well, I mean, it's funny. Growing up in Georgia, especially, and, you know, in the South, kind of a religious upbringing, you know, my feelings about, you know, the gay community or being gay, you know, LGBTQ plus, it was kind of like something that you would see, you know, kind of a cardboard character in a show that was, you know, meant to be a joke, And beyond that, anything beyond that would make you incredibly uncomfortable, you know, because it was outside of your normal sphere. And all of that changed when I became a theater major at SMU. Even at the Northside School of the Arts, you know, because it's just more open, it's just more inclusive, and the arts is a place where creativity and diversity is celebrated, and where people who feel different can feel nurtured and loved. And so, you know, I've been on that journey of being an ally to the gay and lesbian plus community, but it definitely took it to another level when my son, when he was 8 or 9 years old, comes back from school and says that he thinks that he's transgender. And it's funny because when he said that, it all made sense. It all made sense. He was always a tomboy growing up. He was born female, and we named him Ruby, but always a tomboy, always wanting to do boy things. Always, his best friends were boys. You know, he was the only, you know, quote unquote girl on the, you know, YMCA basketball team. You know, not that girls can't, but he wanted to do karate, and he became a black belt when he was like 7 or 8 years old. He was just, when he was 3 or 4, he was like, no more dresses, no more dresses. That he was like, no more pink. You know, his mom would just cover him in pink frilly stuff, you know, because that's what she, you know, wanted for her daughter. And then I remember the last time I got him to wear a dress was at a wedding, and I told him it was because it had koi fish all on it, and it had cut off sleeves, and I told him it was a samurai, it was a traditional samurai like uniform. And I remember halfway through the wedding, he walked over to me and he was like, "Daddy, this is not a samurai uniform." Somebody must have told him, and I was like, "Oh, well, it's probably the last time that's going to happen." But there were all of these clues that made it kind of obvious, and even like at the school dances where they would put on these productions, and I remember one time the choreographer told she was like, "All of the boys, cross your arms, and all of the girls, put your hands on your hips, and that's how we end it." And Carter just, you know, walks up and he's like, "Why? Why do I have to do that and not do that?" You know, he was always like self-assured that way. When it came to this thing, it was like, I'm going to do this my way. But when he realized what transgender was, he was just telling a story that I never knew, that he would go to sleep wishing that he was a boy, and he said, "But that could never happen because only magic can do that." Because I didn't know what transgender was. I didn't even understand what transgender was or the community was. But when he realized that's who he was, the person that I'd seen be the most at home with themselves and the most like, "No, I'm doing this my way," became even more like calm, like if his shoulders were up, it was like they dropped just a little bit more. There was just the tension. If there was any tension at all, you know, went away even more so. And I saw him just blossom in this weird way, because it's not like he got loud. He's not a loud kid. He's not like me. He's an introvert, but it was like a quiet confidence and wholeness about him. And I knew that it was scary for me, even though I'd always kind of known it when he said it. I could tell that it was a thing that was always there. It still scared the shit out of me, you know, because you want your kid to be treated, you know, with dignity and respect and live happily. And you see so many obstacles in the way of his happiness, you know? Or at least that's what I thought. I was very wrong. I was very wrong. The truth is that I have never seen a kid more happy. I've never seen a kid more at home. And for me, the hardest thing is when he decided that he was going to change his name and not go by Ruby anymore. Because I had thought long and hard about Ruby. Because it was like a cute little girl's name, but it was also a badass woman business person. Like I had this idea of her being like this high-powered executive who walks into the offices and everybody's like, oh shit, you know, Ruby's here. Everybody get it together. Ruby's coming. You know, I had to take that rough draft of his life and change it. And then he decided on Carter. You know, my name is Kari with a K. My brothers, Curlin and Curtis, both with a K. My nephew, Kian, is Kian with a K. And so he decides Carter with a K. Because he's one of the boys.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's you always think that you're supposed to, or before you have kids, you think that it's your job to teach them. You know, you maybe get nervous about not being able to teach them. And I have found that I am the student more often than not. And if I can just reflect it back to them, you know, in a way that they can hear and understand, then I'm doing all right. And I'm just so grateful, you know, to be in a position to be able to hear and understand, you know,
yeah,
and love through it all.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. But he's a great kid. And yeah, and I've learned a lot. Yeah, and you know, so you know, that's where we are now. It's a pretty good
spot. Well, listen, I gotta tell you, like, when I think of Kari Payton, there is an openness and a joy and a zest for life. Everyone always loves being around you because of the energy that you have in virtually every situation. And it's not surprising to me that in this, you have remained open and positive and giving. And the fact that you consider it a gift that you have been given by your son, having you experience this as a family is so cool. And I'm so happy for Carter, and I'm happy for you and your family. And I wish you just all of the blessings, dude, because you deserve it. You have worked so hard. 20 years as Cyborg, now bringing you to Ezekiel and to a place of great success. I'm so happy for you, and I really appreciate you coming and talking to me today so openly as well.
Absolutely, man. You know, I think the hardest part of the job and the easiest part of the job is just keeping your head up, you know, keeping your head up and pushing forward. You know, you get so many rejections in this business that I find that the ones who can just stay in it and smile through it, you know, are winning, you know.
That's you always. And God bless you for it. Thank you so much, Kari.
Thank you, Brian. This was awesome.
Kari, thank you so much. It was so great catching up with you. I will never forget our days at SMU and the man that you have now become. I respect the hell out of you, my friend. So God bless you and continued success moving forward as you leave the zombies of The Walking Dead. And for all you listening, make sure to tune in Thursday to go off the beat for our sports edition. And of course, we're going to be back here next Tuesday once again. You're the best, listeners. But if you think we're the best, then feel free to subscribe, leave a review. You know what you're doing. We appreciate that so much. It helps us so much to hear from you. So check in on Instagram or on Apple Reviews, and we will see you next week. Off the Beat is hosted and executive produced by me, Brian Baumgartner, alongside our executive producer, Ling Lee. Our producers are Diego Tapia, Liz Hayes, Hannah Harris, and Emily Carr. Our talent producer is Ryan Papa Zachary, and our intern is Sammy Katz. Our theme song, Bubble and Squeak, performed by my great friend, Creed Bratton, and the episode was mixed by Seth Olansky.
If you're a smoker or dipper looking to make a change, you really only need one reason to do it. But with Zyn nicotine pouches, you can find many. Zyn is America's number one nicotine pouch. It's made with only 6 simple ingredients. Plus, Zyn is the only nicotine pouch with a 10-day hassle-free trial. There are lots of options when it comes to nicotine satisfaction, but there's only one Zyn. Find your Zyn online or in a store near you at zyn.com/find. Warning, this product contains nicotine. Nicotine is an addictive chemical.
You don't have to hop a plane to see the world. This month's Free This Week picks on Xfinity brings you around the globe. Experience life at a European resort in the hit comedic drama Seaside Hotel from Walter Presents. Watch romance blossom abroad in a Scottish love scheme from Hallmark Movies Channel. Celebrate Earth Month with planet-saving docuseries like EcoEye with Duncan Stewart on Magellan TV. And be transported to your happy place with iHeartRadio's Feeling Good playlist. Just say Free This Week into your Xfinity voice remote.
With dozens of streaming services, box office films, and content to choose from, people are spending over 2.5 years of their lives searching for what to watch. But The Hollywood Reporter brings you THR Charts, one place for you, your family, and friends to find the most watched TV shows and movies every week. THR Charts is a guide to help you spend less time scrolling through platforms so that you can spend more time watching and binging the content everyone is talking about, all supported by data and trusted sources like Nielsen, Comscore, and Paired Analytics. Check out THR Charts on HollywoodReporter.com.
There's a lot of pros to drinking Health Aid kombucha. No cons that I can think of. Pro, amazing taste. Pro, pairs well with anything. Pro, probiotic. That's a literal pro. And it's deliciously refreshing. It's the perfect pairing to your meal or great on its own, whether you're having Pink Lady Apple, Berry Lemonade, or one of the other great flavors. It's the perfect swap for soda or alcohol. Make it part of your daily routine. Look for the brown bottle with an anchor on it and try Health Aid Kombucha today.